And thanks again to everyone that's read, helped us open the meeting. And I'll take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. We're glad you're with us. Particularly welcome to any visitors and a huge welcome to any newcomers that might be in a room with us tonight. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So yeah, like I said, we are a speaker meeting this evening, and it falls on me to introduce our speaker. So the gentleman that's come along to share with us tonight, I was thinking about it earlier, we've known each other for something like 13 or 14 years. I first encountered him when I was in a space where I needed to reach out and get some help, and he was one of the people that was there with that hand reaching back to me saying, what do you need and how can we help? And I will be forever grateful for that. I've shared about that many times. It was my first encounter with anything to do with online recovery. He just celebrated a pretty significant moment in his recovery, clean time. I'll let him share about that if he so chooses. So I'm really looking forward to hearing him share. And he's going to share for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever he's comfortable with, and his experience before, how he found us, and what it's like to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous today. So, Chris, without further ado, over to you, my friend. The floor is yours. Please share with us. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Steve. My name's Chris. I'm an addict.
Hi.
Hello, Chris.
Welcome.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome.
Yeah, hi, Chris.
I was supposed to speak last week, and unfortunately, I made a mix-up in the time, so I did not give myself enough time, and I apologize for not showing up last week. And thank you, Steve, for giving me a second chance. I believe I have shared on this at one time in the past. I think that time I used a phone. So Blue Jeans is much nicer. It's a much easier way to do it. I am currently a member of the Friday Night Men's Meeting in Green Lawn, New York. And we meet on Fridays at 6:30 p.m. And I've been a member of that group probably for more than 20 years. I moved up to New York in 1990 for a job. And this is the longest I've ever lived in one place in my life. And Steve said 40, 45 minutes. You'll be lucky if you get 15 minutes out of me, but I'll try and stretch it out. I'll try and give you guys a long version. Anyway, I was born overseas. I was born in Africa. And my father was in the CIA. We did not know this until a few years before he died, because they are pretty good at keeping secrets. And anyway, I was born in Africa, and I spent my childhood, my first 11 years in various countries in Africa, and I've been in many places all over the world, and we moved to the U.S. permanently in 1973, and at that time, I was I had a lot of screws loose in my noggin for a lot of reasons. I was not a particularly well-adjusted kid. And I got into trouble with the cops very early on. I was a violent kid. I was a rule breaker just because I wanted to break rules. And I had just begun to smoke pot and to drink alcohol. That was my introduction to drugs. And that really, I feel like drugs actually prevented me from becoming like a mass murderer or serial killer. Because I was a really angry kid, and I was also good with explosives. Not a good combination. And I feel like when the addiction took over, it just sucked all that energy out of me, and all I wanted to do was use. And around that time, I was also busted by the cops and the ATF. Like I said, I like to make bombs, so you know the feds get interested in you when you do that. ATF, for those who are not in the U.S., means alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. It's a bureau that busts people for making bombs and selling guns. And I was 13 years old at the time. I was sent to a school for very bad boys up in Massachusetts, and I spent 2 years there. And it was there that I sort of learned about harder drugs. I had been smoking pot, and I had been drinking, you know, some like beer and whatever we could find. And there I started to find out about pills, about psychedelics. I never really got a chance to use a whole lot when I was up there. But when I came back from that school at 16, I was ready to go. And I hit the ground running. I started using everything I could get my hands on. I was mostly a pill head. I liked the PDR was my Bible. For those of you who are of a certain age, you'll remember that. This was this giant book that doctors buy, and it's updated with all the various pills and what they're good for and what's in them and you know, what the symptoms and side effects are. And it was just like, for me, it was literally, it was a Bible. It was like, I loved just sort of leafing through it and looking at the pictures of the pills and reading about the various things they do you. And so I took a lot of pills and I got in some trouble, not a huge amount, but, the biggest trouble I did get into was a hit and run where I was, I hit somebody and then sped off, which is not considered to be good form. And I was busted for that. But really, most of my real crimes were before I started to really use. And like I said, I feel like the drugs just took the criminal out of me. It just, I was just a kind of a pathetic sneak thief. But the violent person was pretty much gone, and the drugs took that out of me. What happened was, is at 18, I had dropped out of high school. I took my GED, and for whatever reason, actually passed it. And my life was just a mess. I never left the room. You know, I was living at my parents' house. They didn't know what the hell to do with me. I was just using constantly. Basically, of all the drugs I used, probably the ones that messed me up the most were pot and beer. And that was what I was using every single day. I used to start up, I was, 17, and I was going to a beer store that would sell me beer without carding me. And every single morning I would start up, I would get up and I'd have $1.05 that I had somehow scraped together. And that would buy me one quart of Colt 45 malt liquor. And that was how I got my day started. And back then you had cigarette machines, and I had a game I played where I would go up to a cigarette machine and start hitting it like, this damn thing doesn't work. It's not giving my cigarettes, and I'd get a free pack of cigarettes. That was how I sort of started every day. And it was really pathetic, and it was miserable, and I hated myself, and I hated the world. And what happened was my parents consulted a psychiatrist who told them to, put me in a psych hospital. And that's exactly what happened. I got put into a psych hospital in Baltimore, and I hated them for it. You know, they coerced me into it. I didn't have any choice. And I hadn't been 18 very long. I found out later I didn't need to, I could have just told them to go screw themselves. But at the time I wasn't really up on things very much. So I went there, I stayed there. It was a locked ward, it was a psych ward, it wasn't a rehab. And I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous there. This was in 1980, so I just celebrated 42 years. And I was 18 years old, I was in the psych hospital, and Baltimore was just beginning their NA at the time. And they had three meetings going in the entire city, three NA meetings. And one of them happened to be in the hospital that I was in. It was up in the A7 ward, which was their brand new drug treatment ward. They actually had a well-known drug treatment ward, sort of a Betty Ford clinic. And it had, mostly sports people, like sports stars would go there. So you'd have, baseball players and football players would show up. And but when I was there, they hadn't really gotten going. They were just beginning. But they did have an NA meeting right from the beginning. I have no idea if that NA meeting is still meeting there. It used to be on Tuesday nights. And that was the first NA meeting I ever went to. And the one thing I remember about that was I was in a psych hospital. And if anybody's had the wonderful experience of being a patient in a psych hospital, you walk around and everybody's just a little bit better than you are. No matter how kind they are, how nice it is, they're always just a skosh above you. And you always feel like, all these people, are a little bit better than me. And the NA meeting, that I didn't get that feeling at all. You know, I was just another knucklehead there. They didn't treat me special. They, you know, everybody had their own ass on fire. They didn't really have a whole lot of time to mollycoddle me. And the only difference was when the meeting was over and we went downstairs, I went back into my locked ward and they went out the front door. And when I got out of that hospital, I stayed in the Baltimore area. I decided I couldn't be around my old neighborhood. I really needed to stay in that area. And so I got an apartment in Baltimore. Actually, what I did was I stayed in a psychiatric halfway house for 6 months after that, and then got an apartment in that area. And so I was very involved in early Baltimore NA. I know a lot of the folks that were around back then. Some of them are still clean. The chair of my first meeting, Louis P., I believe he's still around. I believe he's still alive. And he's got, you know, 6 months more than I do, because he was one of the old timers there. Him and Avon had 6 months each, and they were the old timers. There was a couple there. I don't remember their names, but they were nice people. I liked them. And they had, I think, about a year. So that was the old timers in NA. So when I got clean in Baltimore, I was living on my own in an apartment, and my parents were actually helping me out. And I took a student loan, and I went to a tech school, and I learned how to do technical stuff, basically to fix radios and computers and stuff like that. And I got a job in the DC suburbs area. And so in 1983, I moved from Baltimore to the DC suburbs area. And NA had been going in DC longer than Baltimore. I think DC is maybe about 7 or 8 years older than Baltimore. Not a whole lot older. And I started to get involved in those NA meetings. And one of the things that happened was I was really convinced that I had really good NA, you know, that my recovery was in good shape, because I was very intense. And back then, I was making a meeting every day. I was, you know, hardcore sponsorship, really, you know. Baltimore is a blue-collar town. It was kind of a tough town. And I remember when I moved over to D.C., they weren't doing their N.A. right, so I figured I would set them straight and tell them how to do N.A. right. Needless to say, it took me about a year to make a friend. That did not work very well. And so after 10 years, I moved up to New York. I got a job up here. And this time I kept my mouth shut. And I went to meetings and I learned, you know, the lay of the land, and they did things a bit differently. And like, I think in DC, they call the person who opened up the meeting and did the stuff that Steve just did, I think they call them the secretary. And up here, they call it the chair. I think down there, if you were chairing a meeting, you were actually the one who was speaking. When they had speaker meetings, it was the speaker would speak the entire hour, and nobody would share. It was just a speaker thing. And so when I moved to New York, a speaker meeting basically means the speaker opens up the meeting like I'm doing now, and then they would shut up and people would share. So just, you know, small cultural differences like that. And I just had to learn them, and it was no big deal. But I've been involved in NA here for all that time, since 1990. I moved up here in 1990. And I've gotten involved in a lot of service. I've been doing NA service most of my recovery. I've done a lot of technical work, you know, with NA on the web and IT and stuff like that. And currently I'm basically the web servant for my area. So I just maintain the website, which is really not a particularly big job. And I'm also working on an application with some friends of mine in NA that is for NA members, but actually has nothing to do with NA. So I'm not going to talk about it much more than that, other than, you know, we're the people it serves. Really, I can't say enough about NA. It's where I grew up. When I came in, I was 18 years old. I didn't know how to live life. I was unemployable. I couldn't live on my own. I didn't have living skills. I needed that halfway house. That was really, really important for me, because if I hadn't had that, I wouldn't have learned how to do stuff like, you know, take care of myself, wash the dishes, cook a meal, things like that. Really basic stuff I didn't know how to do. And then for living a couple more years after that in an apartment. NA members helped me out a lot. They helped me to grow up. I've always been a little bit, unusual. I don't play well with others. And NA helped me to learn how to play well with others. We're kind of a touchy crew. NA members, we tend to assume stuff in other people. This is something I've noticed. It's like if somebody's looking at me, we don't just say that person's looking at me. We say that person's looking at me and they think that I'm, bad, or they think that I'm ugly, or they think that I'm weird, or they know that I'm lying, or, and this is a big problem for me. I'm worse at it than most people. Most addicts are worse at it than most other people. And so one of the things I learned to do is to be direct, say, why are you looking at me? Or, maybe not put it that way, but, not immediately assume that they think that I'm ugly or that I'm weird or something like that. It taught me to actually give people the benefit of the doubt. If anybody needs the benefit of the doubt, it's addicts, because most of us are making it up as we go along. I've learned compassion like you wouldn't believe. If you can get along with somebody who is, like us, you're likely able to get along with somebody who's anywhere else. I mean, I was a manager in my job for 25 years, and as a result of NA, I was a very good manager. I worked pretty hard. I was able to, keep people for dozens of years, and it really worked out quite well for me. And I credit NA directly for that. NA helped me in my technical work because it gave me a place to practice, and it gave me people who, might complain a lot, but they wouldn't fire me if I screwed up. And so it gave me a place to actually try stuff out. I'm just shutting a window because they're actually doing work outside. And I don't know if you can hear it, but I can sure as hell hear it. There's a crew of people actually digging up the street, and that makes a lot of noise. I live in a house, by the way, which is kind of cool. This is a house that, the bank owns it, but I pay the bank for it. And so in effect, I own it. The bank may own it, but I'm responsible for everything in it. And so that's directly because of NA. I've been married for 26 years directly because of NA. Actually, I think it's more like 27 years. I'd better know soon because my anniversary is next month. I have learned how to have my place in society. I don't feel like I'm a little bit out of kilter anymore. I feel like I belong in this world. The NA has just given me absolutely everything I can imagine. I feel like the steps are really important. I feel that they are transformational, that they are the steps are the difference between NA and other treatment options. What they do is they help us to know ourselves, to know our place in the world, to know how we work. They give us an unfair advantage over people who don't have them. I can't say enough about the steps. Also, the traditions are magic. I really feel like the traditions are almost unbelievable how well they work. They were written in the late 1940s and early 1950s, and they didn't have any of the technology that we have now, that kind of stuff, and they nailed us. It's like they understood exactly who we are right now in 2022. Another thing that people don't know about the traditions is that they're about the same age as NA. I believe they were approved by AA in 1952, and NA, the current NA, was started in 1953. And we had to learn to use the traditions because our first few years in NA, we didn't really apply the traditions to our recovery, and NA almost died. People say NA started in 1953. NA actually really started in 1959 or 1960. Because it almost died. It was down to, I think, zero meetings, and they restarted it. And when they restarted it, they applied the traditions. And I just feel like the traditions are unbelievably, you know, they're just magical. And I feel like our book, the It Works How and Why book two, is probably the best book for the traditions. You know, even the one that was written by the people who actually wrote the traditions, I feel like our book does a really good job on that. I do like the NA literature. I like the NA culture. I when I first came in 1980, there was a lot of cross-pollination. Most, you know, we only had three NA meetings, so most of us made a lot of AA meetings. And we all got along very well with the AA people, except when they told us to get out because we were using drugs. But we mostly, you know, we dealt with that. And as NA has grown, it's separated itself from that culture. And I've just liked the way that we roll for whatever reason. You know, it's a different culture. I could go into it. I'm not going to, because that's really not the purpose of this meeting. But in any case, I felt like I just liked NA more. And so I stuck with it. And I have wanted to leave NA a number of times. Like I said, I've been doing NA service for over 40 years. And that means that I have wanted to strangle NA members many, many times. And there have been times when I've been really angry. And I want to walk into a meeting and hear the thing that was going to justify me leaving. And I never heard it. I have spent some time where I dropped out of NA and went to the other fellowship for a little while. That never stuck, because it just, you know, I took all my toys and went home, and I found out that I didn't really like it there. So I came back, you know, with my tail between my legs and learned to get along. And yeah, we're a tough room, but I feel like we're completely worth it. I love addicts. I love NA members. I love being in NA. I have nothing but gratitude for this thing. And, you know, this is about as much time as you're going to get out of me. I'm really sorry, Steve. I am not a circuit speaker. And so I've dragged this out about as long as I can, but I've grown my entire adult life in NA. And I have nothing but good to say about it. And if you want to complain about it, go ahead. I'll listen to you. I'll nod. I'll even sympathize with you. But I'll say, you know, so which meeting are you making tomorrow? Because, you know, we just keep making meetings. And we keep giving back, and I feel like it's really important to get into the middle of the pack. You know, dive in NA. This is not a club. This is not a periphery to the rest of our lives. What I do every day is I wake up and I do the first step. I am an addict. I do not have power over drugs. It doesn't matter whether or not somebody else does. It does. Yeah, it's unfair. You know, feel sorry for me, but it doesn't change the fact that I'm an addict and I can't use today. And NA is one way for me to not use today, and it works. So it works for me, and that's my experience, strength, and hope. Thanks. I'm done.